Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Good evening, Christopher.
And our tactics guy and my stats bomb, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
I'm your stats bomb.
You are. You are the bomb, mate. We're going to talk about whether we can see a way, a world in which Tottenham are fixed, which it sounds like it's going to be quite a morbid episode, but we're definitely going to have some upbeat content, so don't switch off just yet. I see Bardi's already planned ahead and has got a happy ending to finish on, which is always nice.
So it's my favourite kind of evening.
Yeah, finish on a happy ending, yeah. Always good, mate, always good. Okay, we'll start off with a question from Chris Harvey, who said, are we about to embark on years of mid-table obscurity where we flirt with relegation rather than Champions League qualification? Which is a very Spursy question, I think. I imagine that Chris Harvey, probably like me, grew up in the 90s. Buddy, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a fear, isn't it, that maybe it isn't this team that's kind of tapped out. Maybe it's our club. Maybe we're going back downhill, and we're going to find out who the real fans are and who the real bloggers and vloggers and podcasters are. And it will just kind of scrape away the fat that's came back, and we'll come back in 10 years lean and mean and ready for Champions League again.
Or League Two.
Or League Two, which would really kind of make us hard and lean.
Imagine being in League Two with our new stadium. That would be epic.
62,000 people turning up every week to watch us struggle against Bolton.
I think someone would come and buy us. I think a Qatari would definitely come and buy. If we were League Two with that stadium, we're definitely a prospect. Someone would come in with £1 million and buy us, for sure.
Yeah.
or we would just become Tottenham Hotspur NFL, because they seem to love it. They get charged a load of money for beer and they pack out the stadium. They loved it. They were having a whale of a time. It looked like hell of a lot of fun. It made me almost wish to like Gridiron.
Maybe that's the ultimate goal. The football club is a front for the football club.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like The Sopranos, but with sport.
Yeah.
Nathan, how about you? Are we about to embark on years of mid-table obscurity?
Probably not. I think, like, let's say things...
That's a lot less optimistic than I expected.
Well, yeah, I know. But, like, I wouldn't completely rule it out. I don't want to...
Jesus.
I don't want to say no, and then, 5 years down the line, that's haunting me forever. If things are, like, really darkly as bad as they feel like they are, we can sink back down to our level and we're still top six. Like, for as good as our assets of Pochettino and Harry Kane are, underneath that we've built a foundation and a bedrock that says we are so much bigger than the next best, than Everton or Leicester.
Yeah.
That's not a good, that's a miserable answer, actually, isn't it?
My god.
Yeah, you're not making me feel much better, to be honest.
Okay.
Nate.
Well, aside from that, probably things will turn around. So
I think where our squad building has been incredibly poor these past few years, our club building has been elite. And Daniel Levy is getting a lot of criticism at the moment, but should be praised for the position he's put our club in, which I personally think means that we won't be embarking on years of mid-table obscurity, because the structures are there to allow us to spend some fucking money in the transfer windows going forward. I feel quite relaxed in a kind of medium, short to medium term. It's just this current period is just sticky as hell and feels horrible. And it's kind of it's the uncertainty, I think, that makes you feel the most uncomfortable as a football fan. We don't know what's going to happen with Pochettino. We don't know if the club or Pochettino are going to walk away. And we don't know what that might bring if that were to happen. And it's not a very nice feeling. You sort of feel a bit on edge about the whole thing. We could be on the verge of losing one of our best managers of all time, and that's not great. It's not a nice feeling to have week to week to week, particularly going into an international break where we could do with some certainty. Okay, so Natural Finish asked, will it be more prudent to make wholesale changes like Sanchez and Foyth at the back and blooding more youngsters, or do we stay the course with the current team? Bardi, we spoke about this a little bit last time out, but what do you think?
Yeah, I'm fully on board this now.
Really?
I would rather us lose trying to progress than keep going with the same old faces and getting the same old results. I mean, I wouldn't be against Sanchez and Foyth starting as centre backs, because if that's the future and that's the way the club is going, then why not? We're not going to get any worse than what happened on Saturday. So I would be more forgiving for errors happening with these guys and Skip and everything else. We spoke a few weeks ago that if Spurs' run of form happened and we were trying to implement five or six brand new players, we'd be more forgiving. And I think for sure the majority of people would be more forgiving if we were trying to progress the club and play with some kind of identity that's lacking at the moment.
Nathan?
I think no, probably not. I wouldn't say that there's absolutely no benefit in going down that road, but I think I wrote an article recently on Question 2. I wrote an article recently and I explained that I think that the crux of our issue at the moment is that we are trying, or at least we seem to be trying, to return to playing a style of football that we did a couple of years ago that was really brilliant and successful, but we either don't have the right players for that still, having spent a fair amount in the summer, or that's just something that's going to take time for coaching reasons. And I don't think that our sort of young and hungry players are capable. They could put in maybe better performances than we've seen in the last week, and we can raise the floor a little bit that way. But I don't think that a centre-back partnership of Sanchez and Foyth probably returns us to being very good again and allows us to play Pochettino football.
So I think not just that, but also it wouldn't be great for Foyth's development to be playing alongside Sanchez. I think now is the time to start playing Foyth alongside Alderweireld and to allow him to come in alongside a very competent centre-back partner. Or Vertonghen, rotate the two if necessary. Okay. I don't think throwing them both in at once would necessarily be helpful to either of their development. I think we can be slightly strategic about this. And, you know, there are players that will be leaving. We know that. So Rose Norrie will likely be leaving in one of the next two windows. So I think it would be reasonable to stop playing both of those players immediately. And I don't think we'd see considerable drop-off if we were to do that. So Ben Davis has suffered with injury problems the past year, but we've seen Ben Davis have good spells at Spurs. He had a particular run of 3 months at the end of 2016-17 season where he was really, really good and he was attacking well and scoring goals and assisting. He was excellent during that period, and there's no reason why Pochettino shouldn't be able to get him back to that. In the meantime, we've got Ryan Sessegnon coming in, who we hope will be a long-term left-back solution. So bringing in those two for Rose, I don't think is a big risk. Likewise, Aurier has been pretty much a disaster, except in like a handful of games since he arrived. So is there really a big drop-off in playing, say, Walker Peters at right-back? I don't see that being too much of a risk.
I think we need to forget Carl Walker-Peters. If he's not playing when Aurier is suspended and we're putting Sissoko there, then he will never play. We spoke a few weeks ago about him getting a run in the team. I don't think it's going to happen. I think his time is done, and I don't think we should even consider him a squad option now.
So, yeah, I mean, I completely agree with what you've just said, and whoever advised Walker-Peters to sign a new contract and stay at Spurs needs sacking, basically. He needs to find better advisors because that was the worst career move. He's now wasted 3 years, basically, where he should have been playing mm-hmm. first team football somewhere. And, you know, it might be that he's not good enough for Spurs, but we've not really put the time in to find out. But yeah, anyone other than Aurier, then. Juan Foyth at right back. Whoever, Tariq Hines, who's our backup right back in the under-23s. I just don't think the drop-off from Aurier, who's been at worst calamitous, to any new right back would be that much of a problem.
How about Moussa Sissoko?
What did you make of Sissoko playing right back?
I thought he was all right, I think, compared to the other options that we've seen. And I am prepared to be more patient with Walker Peters myself, but essentially compared to the other option that we're presented with, I much prefer Moussa Sissoko. Not to say that Moussa Sissoko is a long-term option at right-back or the level of right-back that we should aspiring to sort of match the talents that we have elsewhere on the field, but like, he's not committing multiple red cards, so there's that.
and to be honest, we're talking about 3 months here because we have to sign a right back in January.
I think so.
So yeah, it's fine.
I like Kyle Walker-Peters. When I said we should consider him done, it's not me saying that he should be. I just think the way Pochettino's handled him means that he is probably done. I think he should be starting every single game because he is more than a competent right back.
Yeah, Sissoko worries me a little bit in... There's a couple of things about his performances at right back, and, you know, the sample size is really small, and I don't want to be too harsh on a player who's playing out of position, but he gets very square on when he's one-on-one defending, which is slightly concerning. That's a basic that gets taught to defenders at a young age, and maybe that can be coached out of him quickly. But he's also not quite sure where to position himself. On that side of things, though, he has got such good pace that it almost doesn't matter in a way. It's a bit like the Kyle Walker conundrum. He could position himself wherever he wanted because he had the recovery pace to rectify that positioning. And I think there's a bit of that with Sissoko, so I'm not so worried about that.
I feel like the question we're asking here is can Moussa Sissoko play right back? I think he always plays right back, regardless of what position he's actually being placed in. We just need to make those minor adjustments so he's actually used to playing right back as a right back as opposed to playing right back in midfield or on the wing.
And without being cruel to Sissoko, it gets him out of the middle of midfield as well.
Yeah.
Which is legitimately, I think, a good thing.
I have a question for Windy. Say, say Trippier had an awful time in the next couple of months and he was offered back to Spurs for £7 million. Would you take Trippier back, Chris? Would you do it?
No, because we need to be moving beyond players of this ilk and players of this age.
What about a loan?
He's 29.
Short-term loan, just to get us through to the end of the year.
Never go back. Never go back. No, we need to be signing a progressive, young, technically able right back who can carry the ball and push teams back on that flank. And it will make such a huge difference to our team when we have that player inside. It changes everything, having competent right backs. You look at the way Liverpool play and their midfield and attack have so much extra space purely because their fullbacks are so good. It will really help improve things. So Nick Smentana says, who is the single most important player in the squad to help us turn around our form, both from a strategic and morale point of view? Bardi, what do you think? Who's the main man in this situation?
I mean, the obvious answer is Kane, but I think maybe Kane or but Son isn't reliable. I think if Eriksen finds something inside of him, he can maybe change this. But I think probably it'll probably be Dele. I think we need Dele back playing. And if he can form a partnership with Kane and Son, then perhaps we can start springboarding from there.
Nathan, what's your view?
Yeah, I go along the idea of, like, if we can get one of our current seemingly disinterested players on board, so Eriksen or Vertonghen, you can get either of them sort of really buying into things and showing an example of that on the pitch. I think that can really change the mood.
So I like Eriksen as an answer to this, but I would go with Ndombele because I think he can... The upside of an in-form and top-class Ndombele will transform us generally. Yeah. He was sort of showing signs of that as well before these horrendous last few games.
I thought he was really good against Bayern. I thought he was good against Southampton. And then the most recent game, he was taken off at half-time, and I don't think wrongly so. So it's really weird. I don't understand.
Mm.
That's just the shape of our club at the moment, I guess.
Exactly. Strange things are happening. How do I pronounce this next one? I don't want to butcher this. Syracuse Spurs says, we've only really seen one of our new players this season. Where or how do Cess and Lo Celso fit into turning the ship around? So are we expecting both of these players to be available after the international break? We don't know.
They haven't said. They haven't been clear. I think Lo Celso's November and Sessegnon is still unknown.
So there's a little bit of time before we expect to see them still.
Yeah.
And I don't think we can expect too much from either for different reasons. So Sessegnon, this injury's really dragged out, hasn't it? It's going to take him some time to get sharp again. And Lo Celso is coming from a completely different style of football, and it's going to take him some time to adjust. He did look good in his early cameos, but it'll take him a bit of time to settle. What do you think, Nathan?
I think both of them, and we were seeing this already with Lo Celso, but both of them want to pick up minutes in the only area of the pitch where we're strong, which is in the forward roles, to adapt and get game time before they can be moved back to potentially being more useful where they're actually needed. So it's going to be sort of an awkward thing transitioning them in, because yeah, we want to get the match fit and we want to try them out. Sessegnon at left back and Lo Celso in maybe a deeper midfield role and see what that does for us. But also, yeah, both of them want to be work in attacking roles first. So yeah, I think it'll be complicated. I don't think they're going to like, this player's fit now and that solves something straight away.
Yeah, and that is the concern about the January transfer window as well. You know, Poch has been reticent to spend much in January previously, and part of that is because it takes some time to adjust to the systems that he's trying to implement. So to expect someone to come in and immediately hit the ground running is probably unrealistic.
I'm gonna wave a little flag here at this little theory of Pochettino getting players running to hit the ground. He's had Ndombele for the whole summer, man, and he looks miles off the pace.
True.
So maybe if we get a player in from another club who's been running around, I mean, the thing is, I don't understand why Ndombele's taken off at half time. We're 2-0 down to Brighton. If he's thinking long term, I know he wasn't great, but there was a lot of players who weren't great. Keep Ndombele on. He's got to finally adjust and acclimatise to this. And the only thing you can do is, like, if you're learning how to run, you just got to run. Just keep out there plodding, doing the kilometres. And I think he should have got the minutes. And I don't think, and this is my problem with Pochettino, we're not learning anything by making the same changes, the same moves. Keep Ndombele on and let's see. Regards to Lo Celso, I think he'll fit in quite well. From what I've seen of him, he's quite combative. He gets around the pitch. He's got a lovely little touch. I think I'm not too worried about him taking time to acclimatise. And Sessegnon, you know, he is a Premier League player. Yeah, he did a season in the Premier League, and I think he'll settle in quite nicely as well. So the sooner they're both fit and available, the better.
Okay, that's a nice optimistic take. I'm happy with that. The counterpoint to Ndombele staying on, I suppose, is that we've seen lots of injuries occur when players are fatigued or are asked to do extra work. So perhaps they were cautious of the fact that he's new, he's still settling, he had some tough games previously, so maybe they were kind of resting him from a protective position.
It's international week though now, so sure. It's not like we were going into a run of games.
Let's talk a little bit about our formations. Zigzag73 says, why don't we just copy most sides in the league and play 4-3-3 if we can't get a formation that works at the moment? Nathan, what do you make of that theory?
I'm not sure if I agree most sides in the league play 4-3-3. So again, I wrote recently and I feel like I suspect that at the very least Pochettino and the staff believe that we have to play a front two in order to prevent Harry Kane from re-injuring his ankle. And that really glues us to only a couple of formations. And we've seen, yes, lots of the diamond, which everyone hates. And we've also seen some sort of flatter 4-4-2 and also some sort of 4-2-2-2 variation on that. And they all have their problems. As long as it seems like Kane needs protecting physically, we're really kind of stuck. And I think even when we have played 4-2-3-1 a little, we see a lot of Kane playing as the number 10 and Son playing as the forward in those situations. But even outside of just that specific issue, our general midfield issues and which players are fit and which players are in form and everything else is dictating the shapes that we play as well. I before the Brighton game, I posted up a lineup in the mindset of which was not a prediction, but this is the lineup that I'd really like to see. This is what I think we need right now. And then that's exactly the 11 that we played against Brighton. And we were terrible. We were a mess. And I think that, again, Pochettino made the right change of shape at half time to a back three, because Brighton were playing a front two to give us that advantage at the back, both in and out of possession. And we continue to get played off the pitch. So I don't think there's like a simple, not simple, but I don't think there's a tactical or a shape based sort of decision that's an issue there. I don't think Pochettino is getting anything wrong on that level. The issues run deeper than that.
So I actually thought we got a lot better once we switched to the back three, and we only I know it's Brighton, but we only conceded one after that.
Woo!
And we did look more solid. So let's talk about back three. Autonomous Coy says, as Jan and Toby are looking like they got old overnight, should we return to a three at the back with Foyt completing the trio? Bardi, you've always been a big fan of the back three. Is that something you would put faith in?
Yeah, I'm surprised we haven't done this sooner. I think Jan Vertonghen's kind of a little bit broken. His body position, the way he's moving, he's hunched over a lot of the time. He doesn't look the same kind of confident centre-back he was. And I think definitely by playing a three, you can protect them. Juve have had three slow centre-backs for a long time before the last couple of refreshes. And by playing a back three, you naturally protect them. But I think a lot of the reason why we're having issues with formations is we don't have the full-backs or to play a 3-5-2, and we don't have the midfielders to play a 4-3-3. So I do kind of appreciate that problem Pochettino's got at the moment.
Italian football reference. Ding!
it's been a while, you know. I haven't mentioned
it. It's literally not been a while.
it's been a week since we last recorded. But, I mean, I think the back three is a good option for us at the moment, to be honest. Like you say, it protects Vertonghen. It gives opportunities for Foyth and potentially Sanchez and potentially even Tanganga to get some game time, which is no bad thing because we have to prepare for life after Toby and Jan, which is coming along pretty damn quickly.
In January.
So it's no bad idea to switch to a back three. It potentially allows us to carry on playing two up front if that's what Pochettino is insistent on. Although I personally would still prefer to see us go with one up front and, if necessary, just ask Kane to do a little bit less work.
Not play him for 90 minutes of every match is another option.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's vary that. Let's occasionally play Son up top, or occasionally play Lucas up top, or occasionally even play Troy Parrott up top. It's not essential that Kane plays every game and the whole of every game.
I do agree with that, but I also think that, like, if Kane is missing out on games that we're losing, Pochettino gets a lot more flack that way. Not that that's necessarily the best way to make your decision based around how much, like, Twitter abuse you get. But imagine that. But I don't think he needs to play every minute, and I don't think that's, you know, if I'm right and Kane's physical weaknesses are like having a significant impact on our ability to play the football we need to play, then like we definitely need to be not glued to playing him every minute.
So you're suggesting that perhaps we should sell Kane because he doesn't fit our system stylistically?
That's not what I'm saying, Barty. Yeah, you know that's not what I'm saying. And I'm going to edit this entire section now. No,
I'm saying that we should.
No, but like we could begin to experiment with not playing Kane every minute. And then if his stock remains really high and a £300 million bid comes in, it's now not an instant turn your noses up situation.
I agree.
That's a sensible way of managing the situation, I think. Nathan, you're going to love this one. Mabazela Toda says, Poch doesn't know how to manage a game and his tactics are invariably terrible. His results tend to come from momentum / emotion, not logic. Hence why he gets found out by bigger sides and our record against the top six is poor. What do you reckon?
So my response to that is meet me outside the Beaverton Brewery after the Watford game.
Bardi, are you sympathetic to that view at all?
I think we can safely say Mabuzela Toda is proper Poch out. There is some logic there. I could see why Pochettino's best results over the last 9 months have been through chaos. We've spoken about that. So I can see why he's suggesting this and the fact that our best results have been so emotional. Pochettino, for me, does need to start thinking about what kind of a manager he is again and picking his team according to his identity. So I disagree, but I also kind of go, I nod my head a little bit at some of those points.
I think it's very easy to forget the long periods of time where we've been really good under Pochettino when you're going through a bad patch like we are now. And there have been long periods where we have just been steamrolling teams that we would expect to beat and then not beating the top six sides. And that's not terrible. That's fine. Like, you're going to finish in a top four if you beat the majority of teams and draw and lose against a few. That's acceptable. Like, we don't have the resources to compete with Liverpool and Man City at this point, so we lose to them. That's all right, isn't it?
Yeah, man. Like, I don't know. What do you want? Like, will you only be happy when your football club wins every game all the time? I understand that, like, and it, sorry, this isn't specifically about the person who asked this question, but generally the attitude of, like, always find, and obviously right now we should be upset. I understand that as well. But, like, even when times are good, there are people who will find something to complain about. And it's just like, what do you want, you know?
So, yeah, thanks for your question, Mabuzela Toga. No. I liked your question, and although Nathan metaphorically wiped his backside with it, it clearly added a good discussion to the podcast.
That's
so
true.
We appreciate it.
And it's a fair comment to make as well. He's more than allowed to make that comment.
I think also it was perhaps a little tongue-in-cheek. So,
okay. Also,
yeah,
okay.
That's my reading of it. We started touching on the Brighton game, but we didn't really go into much detail. So let's talk about it a little bit. Bardi, did you find this particular defeat harder to take than the Bayern Munich defeat?
Yeah, and I was at Bayern. I was in the south stand as the goals started getting pumped in, and I didn't want to leave early because I wanted, it's Champions League. I paid £65 for it. I wanted to stay and watch all of it. But I started making my way parallel across the south stand to meet up with a mate. And as each goal went in, it got easier to make my way across the south stand, which was a bonus. But I thought that was hard to take. But I think Brighton, everybody expected a reaction and a positive one. But to get a reaction that was a negative, even bigger negative, was that was hard to take.
It was so much like the Champions League final in the sense that, like, we'd barely got going and the game was over. Yeah. It was so weird. The Lloris mistake was obviously catastrophic, but the injury was absolutely horrendous. I couldn't watch the replays. I'm not a squeamish person generally, but I spotted his arm the first time round in real time. And I literally just couldn't watch the replays because it was such a terrible injury. And I am not convinced that he's going to come back from that in the same way.
Ever? You don't think he'll ever play again?
I think it will impact him.
Like psychologically?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's going to have a psychological impact forever. So much of goalkeeping is getting a strong arm to the ball and forcing it over the bar or around the post. And I don't know, there's going to be a weakness there, both mentally and physically, and that's going to be tough for him to come back from. What did you think of it, Nathan? And how worried are you about Hugo's future?
It's just another thing on top of all of the existing issues, isn't it? Yeah, the psychological aspects, yeah, because goalkeepers, like, essentially their job is to behave incredibly recklessly and, like, throw themselves face first into several other men's studded boots and between two large metal posts. So yeah, definitely I think that that's a potential thing. He hasn't been in, like, the greatest form recently, but then I don't think, like, Gazzaniga's, like, incredible. His passing might do us a bit of favour. He has got improved feet, but yeah, at least it won't contribute to, I believe, our structural issue. We might concede a couple more goals from shots, you know, whatever, but it isn't like, if in my opinion our only good midfielder in Ndombele was to get a horrific injury, that would be like just cancel the club.
I sort of disagree, to be honest. I feel like,
because he's captain,
I think this is the worst time for Hugo to get injured, because so in terms of, I agree that Gazzaniga's better with his feet. I think there's little doubt that that is the case. He just looks more comfortable on the ball and his passing is better. But at the moment, we're going through a period where we don't really want to be playing out from the back too much because there's so many nerves anyway. And encouraging the opposition when they don't really need much encouragement seems like a bad idea. And I don't want a goalkeeper to be taking more risks. Coupled with the fact that Lloris is, yes, he's error prone, but he is a fantastic shot stopper. And he will, I mean, he does save shots that other goalkeepers just can't.
It's true.
And if they're now going in, that is not going to help. Basically, in a sort of very simple sense. I am nervous. I'm very nervous about this spell without Lloris. Buddy, you're not Gazzaniga's biggest fan, are you?
No, this is terrible news, man. I was concerned about something happening to Lloris and us being left with Gazzaniga. Well, according to you, I think he's our number one for the rest of life. But I don't trust Gazzaniga. But Lloris has been making mistakes. But as Nathan said, if God is going to give us one serious injury and all the squad are lined up, all the starting 11 are lined up, then you kind of would pick Lloris. Just take one for the team. It's like
you definitely pick Aurier.
No, I mean, but probably. Have you seen Escape to Victory? You know, where they need to get they need Stallone to play in the match, and they've got a really good goalkeeper, and they're like, but for the sake of the team, we need to injure you, and they break that goalkeeper's arm so Stallone can play in the final. I don't know. Do you remember that?
I do. Yeah. I remember it well.
So maybe it's just that we had to dish out one big injury, and Lloris was it was his moment. But it's really sad because he is our captain. He's a great goalkeeper, but yeah, we'll be all right. We'll be all right with Gazzaniga as long as people don't shoot straight at him.
It could be the birth of the Alfie Whiteman era at Spurs.
I think so. Could be. Is he any good? I've never seen him play. I would walk past him in Sainsbury's. I have no idea what he looks like.
So
is he little? Is he bigger than 5'5" at least?
He's bigger than 5'5".
So
it's a classic situation with Spurs in that both Alfie Whiteman and Brandon Austin have been with the first team squad for the last two and a half, three years and not out on loan where they could have been getting games and we could have known a bit about them. It's Kyle Walker-Peters all over again. So there's that.
Do you remember when Michel Vorm was really good and then he came to Tottenham and stopped playing football and forgot how to handle the ball every time he played?
I just looked up a picture of Alfie Whiteman. He looks like a Spanish goalkeeper. From just looking at his Wikipedia picture, I think he's going to be great. Handsome man. He can catch for sure.
He's a good name and he's a Spurs fan and he's been at the club for a while, so yeah. Hopefully it won't get to that point where we're reliant on Alfie Whiteman this season.
How old is he?
Like 20. But for God's sake, Spurs, send your young players out on loan.
I thought you were going to say 17, but it's 20, bloody hell.
So we played Eric Dier as a defensive midfielder in this game, which is something that I was vindicating beforehand. I think we all wanted to see Dier get a go. Dier has been out of the team for a long time due to his appendicitis and various other injuries. When he was in the team previously, he had a really rough patch of form. And we just kind of all expected him to come in and be good. And he didn't come in and be good. He was incredibly bad. Do we persist, Nathan?
I mean, I give it a couple of goes. You know, give him a run of games, see if he can capture some kind of form. There is definitely that sort of like, do you remember Eric Dier nostalgia thing for like, but forgetting that he was actually quite bad for an extended period of time. I don't think we should give up on it after one game, but it's not showing a huge amount of promise right now, is it?
The ball literally just bounced off him several times. It was really cringeworthy watching him.
It looked like if one of us had just joined the starting 11 and the ball was bouncing off his shins. I mean, come on, man. At least you might not be able to run and stuff, but you've forgotten how to trap the ball.
So one thing I'd say is that he definitely looked a lot better once he dropped into defence.
Yeah.
And that might be the way to play him back into some form.
I think Dier should only ever play as a centre back now. I was never fully convinced as a defensive midfielder anyway. I think now is his time to go back as a centre back and go and play for someone like, I don't know, Hull or Burnley as a centre back, where maybe Burnley would be quite good, where he doesn't have to play a high line, Just said he needs to block long range shots and get his head on things. I think he would be a cracking defender at Burnley, but not at Spurs.
I mean, you're not going to be saying this after the mass exodus in the next two windows when Eric Dier is the final international footballer left at our club. And he's club captain and our highest paid player. No, honestly, I think we need a defensive midfielder, so we need to persevere with Dier for a bit. But I want to see him eased back in at centre back for a couple of games before we risk playing him in the middle of the park. I mean, we're playing Liverpool in a couple of games' time. Please don't let Eric Dier start against Liverpool, because that is going to be hellish to watch. Christ, they will run him ragged.
I have a funny feeling about the Liverpool game.
What? A positive feeling?
Yeah, I spoke about this on the Fighting Cock on Monday, and I don't know why, but we might go there, and just something might just hit us. Like, we might just get sparked by inspiration, and we might end Liverpool's winning streak. But I'm gonna put there's a caveat here. I think if Liverpool lose the game or draw the game before we play them, we're in all kinds of trouble, because they're just gonna go to town on us. But I have a funny feeling that perhaps, you know, when the moment of darkness is the greatest, that a little match we'll just illuminate our whole team, and perhaps that's what we need.
We really need that, but we kind of thought that Southampton was that, didn't we? Like,
yeah, it wasn't proper dark.
Wasn't dark enough.
No, no.
Okay, Nathan, question from NMAC. Can Nathan do an update on the 12-point transfer plan Spurs needed to complete to rebuild? So he's put needed to complete to rebuild. So he's sort of talking about what we should have done in the summer. But let's talk about this from a January perspective. What do you think are the bare minimum signings required for January to make us a viable Champions League contender?
So I saw this question coming, and I went and found the list that I wrote back in July. And I will read you the first four entries, which are under the high priority section, which is sign to new contract or sell and replace Christian Eriksen. Sign to a new contract or sell and replace Toby Alderweireld. Sell and replace Serge Aurier. And number four, add one more to midfield or sell and replace Wanyama. So the update is it's still largely valid. It's the same stuff, and we definitely did spend a lot of money in the summer, and we can't spend the kind of money that City and United and Chelsea and even Liverpool and Arsenal do, but we still left ourselves a considerable gap, especially having not put onto new contracts existing players.
Not to like take a shit on your insight, because I trust your judgment on all things Spurs. But that's what you'd written there was not controversial in any way. They were things that a lot of people were saying, and I think the majority of Spurs fans would have agreed with those 4 points. And yet they didn't happen. So this is the thing. We kind of got swept up with the signings of Ndombele and Lo Celso and the potential signing of Dybala, because they were really exciting things, and rightly so. And Sessegnon as well. Very exciting young signings. There was a lot to be optimistic about. But Pochettino did state that he wanted a painful rebuild, and we did not get that painful rebuild. I mean, I was very, very unhappy that so many players were left in the squad that should have been moved on and weren't. And I think it's very easy to blame Daniel Levy for that, but I think Pochettino needs to take a share of the blame as well, because he is the manager. He's not the head coach. He is the manager. He is in charge of a squad. If he said to Daniel Levy, get Serge Aurier and Danny Rose out of my squad because they are going to disrupt things, then Daniel Levy would have sold them. I have absolutely no doubt about that. I strongly believe that he'd have taken a small hit if needed. Because what has happened now is that they are worth a lot less money than they would have been in the summer. They're 6 months, or they're going to be 6 months further into their contracts. And as we predicted, they have ended up not shining, and actually worse than we could have predicted, because they've actually actively unsettled the squad. So it frustrates me that we knew what needed to be done and it wasn't done. And yeah, we want someone to blame for that. And I think a lot of fans have gone for Daniel Levy. I think it's somewhere between Levy and Pochettino myself. But it's very frustrating. It's very, very, very frustrating. And now it just leaves us with a heck of a lot of work to do in January. Buddy, what are your priorities for January to get us into the Champions League?
Right back, another midfielder, and And then just a return to form for some of our players, and also a return to form of our manager. Get him talking a bit better about the team, about the project, about the club, everything else. So our manager to get back on form, right back in a centre midfielder.
Buddy, if we lose, say, our next two matches, do you pull the trigger? Do you get rid?
No, probably not. I'd give it a little bit longer. Pochettino's been fantastic, and what I'm scared of is that I'm a little bit Poch out because of, but I don't want to be full Poch out. I want Pochettino to fix this and us to be better and him to lead us into this new rebuild. But I'm scared about what can happen if it continues to get bad. I mean, it's been bad and then it's got worse and now it's really bad. I mean, now we've got 2 weeks to sit and think about this until we play Watford. I just want him to become better, but I'm scared that he doesn't. And the Italian in me thinks change of manager is what every club in the world does now. These 10-year managers don't exist. So firing your manager and starting again it's not uncommon, and it doesn't kill teams. It's not going to destroy us. Perhaps you could even have a short-term pick me up.
Nathan, when you, a couple of weeks back, said that you would give it 6 weeks and then make a judgment call at that point, were you expecting us to have done quite as badly as we have in the interim? Or did you just think, like, we'll largely be fine?
I wasn't expecting the Brighton game, really. Essentially, I think that is, like we said earlier, the Bayern game was really bad, but teams get thrashed by 7 goals to Bayern all the time. The Brighton game for me was, like I said, Pochettino made all the right decisions and we got beat 3-0 by... Brighton aren't actually that bad, by the way.
They're good. They're really decent, good.
But we still shouldn't be being beaten 3-0. So, yeah, things were even worse than I thought. 6 weeks. Yeah, I mean, 6 weeks was just sort of a general rule kind of thing. Like, that's how long you should be giving most situations. Things could get worse in that time period, and maybe we just have to panic. But I feel like we should give Pochettino a transfer window with backing, almost regardless of whatever happens on the pitch before then.
Okay, so I'm just looking at our fixtures between now and January.
Oh, God, this is going to be painful.
I think we've got, like, 15 games. 1, 2, 3, 4. So we've got 16 more matches before the transfer window opens.
Jesus Christ.
Exactly. So this is exactly where I was the other day after the Brighton match. So I agree generally that the best outcome is we muddle through this period and we give Pochettino full backing and full trust to rectify the situation in January, and he builds a fresh new young team and he goes again. That is like the best possible outcome right now. The worst possible outcome is we've got 16 games where the players are not currently responding to him, look like they are fed up of him. There are noises being made that are not great. He doesn't seem to know what the solutions are. He doesn't even have the solutions potentially in the squad. That's dangerous. Like, what? This could get a lot worse before it gets better.
I agree, and we may well be in for a very miserable time. But I don't think that I wouldn't gamble. I wouldn't bet on things getting better with someone else in charge. I think that there are big issues in the squad, and I don't think a change of manager. You know, we may still have those 16 very painful games, and we've got rid of who I believe is maybe the best manager in the world, and then we're in an even worse situation. I don't know. I sort of said a second ago, like, things could get even worse where it becomes unbearable. But to a considerable extent, I'm prepared to go through a miserable time for a while to think long term.
Mm. Yeah, same. And I think Levy needs to be weighing this up very analytically. He needs to be thinking of all possible permutations, because to not do that would be risky in the extreme when there's so much at stake financially. And, you know, so the thing that concerns me the most is we cannot afford to shed our star players.
Yeah.
And that's playing in the back of my mind, like, what happens if Kane leaves? What happens if Son leaves? What happens if Dele leaves? We don't want, like, that is the thing we need to avoid. And to avoid that, we need to have a squad that is somewhat together, that all kind of get on well, well and enjoy going to work and who have ideally Champions League football, but if not Europa League football.
I think we already don't have that.
What you think in terms of you think we've lost that already?
Not to the extent that it's gone forever, but we don't have a we're lacking a togetherness in the squad.
Like
we sort of said before, like player decisions aren't like binary or down to a single issue. It's like Sun might not be like putting in a transfer request. Sun might not be saying, "Oh, look at this club." Sun might not be looking at houses in Germany, but he might sort of think, "Well, if a bid came in, I'd at least consider it at the moment." That sort of thing.
Oh, okay, Nath.
Sorry, that wasn't a helpful sort of happy ending, was it?
I think you and I need to get lubed up and get ready for Bardi's happy ending. Bardi, deliver it.
Okay, the happy ending. Things to be positive about. Heung-min Son is still Heung-min Son. That's a good one. We're about to embark into a brand new age, and new age is always golden and great, industrial. We still have a great manager. We have a fantastic stadium, which I really love. Good beer in there as well. Apparently sausage rolls are good. Someone said that. And we ripped off a load of NFL fans, which is excellent. And we won't lose a football match this week. These are my reasons to be cheerful. Thank you, followers of The Extra Inch, for those nice positive messages.
Nice. Excellent. Mm. Okay. Well, I'm sure that's compensated for the rest of the abject misery throughout this past hour. Let's hope we're back with some more positive thoughts next time we're together. In the meantime, is there anything you'd like to recommend, either of you, that you've enjoyed reading about Spurs this week?
No, stop thinking about Tottenham at the moment. Do something else next Saturday. There are other sports, there are other forms of entertainment, there are friends you haven't seen in a while. I'm going to do something non-football at 3 p.m. on Saturday. I recommend you do the same.
I'm intrigued that at what you're doing at 3 p.m. next Saturday.
No, I don't have a specific plan. I just mean, I'll think of something before then. Actually, I might be out. Whatever, I don't know. But what I'm saying is, like, as someone who is clearly infatuated with Tottenham, who tweets about Tottenham every day, who has a Spurs podcast and everything else, I'm just saying, like, it's important to not be reliant on a football club for your happiness, because that's not always going to do the trick.
I'm just gutted that you don't have a Civil War reenactment or an epic game of Warhammer lined up for 3 p.m. next Saturday.
I think you'll find I don't play Warhammer, I play Dungeons & Dragons, mate.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at @DavyShambles and SoundCloud @DLindner. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.